Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Baseball Podcast.
Good afternoon and welcome to the FantasyTeamAdvice.com weekly baseball podcast. My name is Jimmy Calandra, the lead baseball writer of Fantasy Team Advice and your host for this afternoon. I am joined today by two special guests, both from Razzball.com, Robert Smokey Langevin from Hoboken, New Jersey, and Sky Sperling from Duck Country in Eugene, Oregon. Welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jim.
All right. In case we're too into the baseball talk later on in the show, if you guys want to first tell our listeners where they can find you, maybe what you're working on at Twitter.
Age before beauty, Sky. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm Sky Sperling. You can find me at Sky_Razzball on Twitter. I'm a contributor for both Fantasy Baseball and Fantasy Football on Razzball, and I also cover DFS for baseball over there. You can currently find my write-ups on pitchers by month from 2014, some deep league sleepers, and also BABIP regression, and I'll also be working on some arbitrage work here shortly. So, yeah, a little busy over here. Over to you, Smokes.
I also write at Razzball.com. I cover mostly closers and relief pitching there. I also cover football, and I am the editor for the soccer site that runs on Razzball as well. You can find me on Twitter, at Smokey_Lukey. That's Loogy.
All right, cool. So it's February, and means draft month is right around the corner. Before we get into some draft strategies later on, I just want to go over some of the news and notes from last week and get you guys' take on it, just for people that are finalizing their rankings and everything like that. And the first thing we have, James Shields finally signed this past week with the San Diego Padres. What do you guys think this does for his fantasy value, and where would you draft him? Would you move him up in your rankings? What do you think about that?
For me, in all honesty, his value stays kind of sideways. I do think he'll see an uptick in K per nine, but I think, unfortunately, because he's now part of the San Diego crew, I think people will probably overdraft him or be overly zealous. I think he's still a good pitcher, but it doesn't really change anything for me personally.
Yeah. I also think that I agree with you on that thing. I mean, especially with the revamped lineup that San Diego has, I think people might go chasing wins, which is never a good strategy in fantasy draft. Smokey, what do you think about Shields?
Yeah, I think he probably remains about the same. You know, I probably have him, you know, ADP probably in the 90 to 100 range. I probably have him ranked somewhere close to like Tyson Ross, maybe like a Iwakama, somewhere in there. The thing that's bothering to me is that his career record against the National League West, I know he's always fits in the American League, but he's only 4-3 against the National League West in his career. So, you know, like Sky said, I do see an uptick in his case for nine, but that's probably about, I think his win total is probably capped.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that as well. So I think we're in a consensus here. Shields is still a nice complimentary pitcher to your aces, but don't go nuts. In other news, we see that Jonathan Lucroy is out 4 to 6 weeks with a hamstring strain, but the Brewers say he's expected to be ready for the start of the season, even if he misses all of camp and a lot of spring games. Does this change where you would draft him in your rankings? A lot of people have him as the number two catcher behind Buster Posey, and I've even heard some people have him as number one. Smokey, so what do you think, Lucroy?
Well, I mean, I'm under the old idea that I never draft catchers early, so I probably wouldn't draft Lucroy regardless of where his ADP is now, unless he fell somewhere ridiculous past like the eighth, maybe tenth round. He's going in like the sixth right now. You know, for his stat-wise, I mean, if you compare his numbers apples to apples, regardless of position and what equipment they wear, what's the difference between him and Melky Cabrera, who you can get 10 rounds later? There isn't really anything.
That's a great point. You know, a lot of people, times the position scarcity comes into play, and people will overrate players based on that. And I just think catcher is not, like you said, not the position to go spending up on. Sky, what do you think about Luke Roy?
Yeah, I'm in the same draft camp as Smokey in terms of how I approach catchers, and we can talk about that a little bit later in our draft. You'll definitely be able to tell from both Smokes and I that we waited on catcher pretty long. The main thing with me about Luke Roy and with players like Luke Roy, he was very runs and RBIs driven. But his regular stat line, the stuff that he can actually control, was pretty mediocre at best. So I don't understand going after him, especially in the top five catchers myself. He would be more of like an 8, 9, 10 for me, honestly. And I know that sounds crazy, but I think runs and RBIs really pushed up his value beyond what he really is, and he's going to have a bit of a down year, even without this injury at hand.
Yeah, I agree. Now, speaking of camp, we don't yet know which one Cuban infield sensation Yoan Moncada is going to be reporting to yet. But if he does sign somewhere soon, what are your expectations for him in 2015? I mean, the kid is, I think he's only 19. I think he's going to turn 20 during this upcoming season. So what do you think about him for 2015? And does it depend where he goes, what happens to his value? So, Sky, let's go to you on that. Moncada, what do we think?
I mean, in all honesty, the age factor just tells me wherever he ends up signing, I don't think we really see him in 2015 other than maybe a cup of coffee in September. and that's just me believing that any organization that's going to sign a Cuban player who's never really faced major league pitching aren't going to throw him to the wolves, i.e., whatever team signs him is actually intelligent. Now, I can't be held against that if they don't. But yeah, to me, I don't think we really see him this year. You know, he's obviously going to be intriguing for dynasty leagues, but it's not a 2015 play to me at all for fantasy purposes.
Smokey, what do you think about Moncada?
Yeah. I kind of agree with Sky. I mean, the organization that signed him is going to put such an investment into him that there's probably going to be a cry from the fan base to actually want to see him sooner than they probably are going to be able to. The ideal situation for Moncada is he'll probably sign, probably go straight to AA. It's going to be in a warm weather AA destination. He'll probably get 200 to 300 at bats there, probably go to AAA, probably get it like maybe another 50 to 100 there. And he'll probably get probably another 50 at bats in September on a September call-up. That's probably the most I can see him. I mean, he's probably a 15 homers, 30 steal guy when he gets all said and done. So that's probably what he'll put up this year. But we won't probably see his ability or the availability on his franchise until next year.
Right. I think owners are going to want to see him more than we're actually going to see him, like you guys were saying. But definitely, like you guys said, dynasty leagues, he should be way up there on your radar. The Cuban sensations are starting to work out. Looking at you, Abreu. So last thing on the news and notes, this may seem a little bit insignificant because it's only a minor league deal right now, but Eric Young Jr. signed with the Atlanta Braves yesterday. And if you're looking for cheap steals later on in the draft, is he somebody that you're going to look to? Because it is a minor league deal, and he's going to be invited to camp. But steals you can find later on in the draft. So is Eric Young maybe someone that you would look at later on if you're spending it power early on in the draft? Smokey, what do you think?
You know, I think the Braves is a perfect spot for him to land. I mean, look at their left field situation. They basically have Johnny Gomes penciled in there, who's basically a career platoon guy. Young's splits versus left-hand and right-hand are kind of neutral, so I don't know how he's going to fit in there with Gomes. I think they'll probably go with a hot hand. But the good thing that Young has in his going for him is that he can play center field and he can also play second base. And those two positions are also up in the air for the Braves because B.J. Upton, who knows what he's going to do in spring training. He's been rumored to actually be bought out, maybe even cut completely. And the Braves have two youngsters at second base, Peraza, you know, and the other guys that are coming up. And I just don't see him not getting at least 350 to 400 plate appearances. And he's probably going to get you 20 to 25 steals out of those appearances.
Yeah, in limited time too. If you notice, he's one of those guys that, you know, it's so frustrating when you're setting your lineups and you see the little X next to his name, and then you got to take him out of your lineup. But somehow, in limited time, he still winds up. He had 44 steals in the recent years. He had 30 with the Mets last year. So yeah, I'm on board with that. Sky, what do you think?
Yeah, actually, the main reason that I am interested in him is specifically what he mentioned about Gomes. Seeing him pencil in as the left fielder, he's really just a lefty masher at this point in his career. There was never really much else, to be honest. So at the very least, I can see them. And we also have to realize that Nick Markakis is hurt, and who knows how healthy he's going to be this year. They have him penciled in at leadoff. I could very easily see the Braves, at the very least, against right-handed pitching, sticking Eric Young out in left field and having him bat leadoff. It's an unexciting offense, but when you start thinking about it, especially for maybe deeper leagues, you've got a speed guy who can be hitting in front of Freddie Freeman and perhaps an on-base machine like Nick Markakis and scoring you a few runs and stealing you a few bases. So I'm actually intrigued. Obviously not for shallow leagues, but for deeper leagues, he's a very intriguing option.
Sure. Why not? So, yeah, so the news, you know, it was a little bit light this week, but, I mean, I think we covered a lot of the basics. So let's get to the fun stuff. Everybody relishes the draft when it comes around, and people do 10 or 12 drafts in the off season and you mock every day. So let's get to a little bit of strategy and some ADP talk. Before we get to do that, for listeners not familiar, the three of us have been involved in a writer's draft with some other writers from Razzball, some other writers from Fantasy Team Advice, and a couple from RotoExperts.com. And we are just about done. And I see, Sky, that you made a pick while we were on the air. That was dedication. Sky went with Brandon Morrow in our last round, which I think is a nice value, actually. So let's talk about that. We're just about done with the draft. So why don't we go and maybe highlight a couple of picks that we thought that we stole wherever they had them in the draft, or even talk about someone that one of our colleagues stole that we were upset that we didn't do or anything. Like, Guy, let's start with you. What's your favorite pick of the draft here for you?
As far as my team is concerned, I'm actually really happy with Segura. I got him in the 13th round. And he was actually the first middle infielder I even drafted. A lot of guys were taking like Kipnis and a lot of these other middle infielders early, and I had a plan in mind, as long as things didn't go sideways on me, that I wasn't going to even touch a middle infielder until well past the 10th round. And, you know, Segura, there's just a lot that happened to him in 2014, and a lot of it was off the field. Some of it was just, you know, near the bench when he gets hit in the face with a bat by Braun. Just nothing went right in 2014 for him, loss of a kid. I think we have a major bounce back candidate in him this year. I think we can easily see a 7 home run, 30 steal season, with a healthy average once his BABIP gets a little bit more lucky, like he should with his speed.
Yeah, I agree completely. I got Elvis Andrews like four picks later in the same round. I would have strongly preferred Segura for his upside and for his youth, and that he contributes a little bit more even in the power categories than Andrews will. You know, not much, but more is more. Smokey, what about you? What was your favorite pick of this draft?
My favorite pick has got to be the guy who's not getting any credit at the first base, third base slot, Lucas Duda. I mean, just looking at stats and compare him to Josh Donaldson, they're eerily similar completely across the board. And he's going to give you – he's a masher. And basically, if you're going to draft him where he's being drafted, you're probably already going to have your first baseman and third baseman in place. So as a first baseman option for me, I think he's perfect fit. I got him in the 10th round. I mean, that's crazy value for a guy who's going to hit 30 home runs and probably drive in 90. In the middle of that Mets lineup. Unfortunately, I went a little Mets heavy, which is probably going to doom me, considering I'm in the New York metro area.
I, too, am from the New York metro area, and I went a little bit Yankees heavy. And I think my favorite one was in the 22nd round. I took Nathan Eovaldi from the Yankees. I know that's not, you know, obviously that's not my favorite pick, but I'm loving the value. A lot of people are concerned that he's coming to the AL East from the NL East into a hitter's park from a pitcher's park, but I'm really not. There's a couple of factors in play here. His velocity increased by 2.5 miles an hour as the season wore on last year. He's only 24 years old. The 6.60 K per nine is not terrific, but it has risen every year he's been in the majors. Supposedly he's gelling with the Yankees pitching coach. And I think it was Sky, you brought it up the other day when we were talking, that he doesn't have Jared Saltalamacchia catching to him. And he does have Brian McCann, which is an underrated thing. I mean, Saltalamacchia is nice power hitter, terrible catcher. And McCann is not. McCann knows how to handle his pitchers. So I'm looking forward to that as a Yankee fan and now as an Eovaldi owner. Yep. There any picks you guys saw go around the board that you thought someone else stole in our draft that you were said you'd? I'll tell you, mine was Duda. You mentioned I wanted him that round. So kudos to you on that one.
Yeah, there's a couple guys that stood out, and all the value, like I was looking at the draft board, and all the value seemed to come in one round. Like round 17 for this draft seemed like everybody kept getting a steal above a steal. You know, it started with Seth taking Xander Bogaerts first in the round. I think he could blow up at shortstop for the Red Sox. Jose Quintana later in the round to Frank. Jose Quintana is probably one of the most underrated starting pitchers in the baseball right now. You know, his stat line doesn't scream out, I'm a fantasy elite option, but he really probably could be in the White Sox new team. That team, you know, they have a lot of hitters. They're probably going to score a lot of runs, so it's going to uptick his wins. Later in that round, Jared Weaver went to Jamie 17th as well. You know, in a head-to-head league, you're basically looking for one stat and one stat only from a pitcher, and it's wins, and Jared Weaver is going to get a lot of wins. He got 18 last year, which is extreme value in the 17th round. You know, and then I'll give props to Sky around later. He took Yan Gomes because I was looking at Yan Gomes right there, that pick too.
Yeah, that was a tremendous value. I'm looking at the labor draft that they just had the other day, and Gomes actually went about 8 rounds earlier than that. So kudos to you on the Gomes pick on that. So you got a power catcher way later than you should have. So moving on a little bit, when we get to this, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of the majority of questions I get when we're actually close to the draft is stuff like, should I take this guy or should I take this guy? You know, similar players, similar ADPs. So what I want to do today is maybe cover a couple of similarly ranked players of the same position and maybe try to weed through who you guys would take over the other one. I mean, obviously some of them, you know, you'd be thrilled to have them both, but if they're both sitting there and you're on the clock, who are you taking? So let's start with the starting pitcher position. Obviously, Kershaw is the universal number one. So let's drop down a little bit below that. You're sitting on the board, late second round, early third. Max Scherzer and Chris Sale are both there. Who do you take and why? What do you think, Sky?
It's Max Scherzer all day, every day there, and it's not really close for me. And it's not obviously a question of talent with either of those guys. It's just Scherzer has proven to stay healthy over the last couple of years, so he already has that stability built in. And he just moved to the NL, and he was already a high K per nine pitcher. It's going to increase even more. He's still in a pitcher's park, or at least a pitcher-friendly park. And he did move to, if we stay by the stats of last year, which isn't fair, that division in and of itself just struck out a ton across most lineups, and you know, Marlins were top five team for K percentage. So were the Braves. Scherzer all day for me.
Yeah, same with me. I actually have him as my number three overall pitcher behind Clayton and Felix. I'm keeping him for $31 in one of my high stakes keeper auction leagues, which ordinarily I wouldn't do, but I'm saving big on three hitters like Rendon, Yelich, and Prince Fielder, actually, so I can afford to do that. But I love Scherzer's prospects in Washington this year. I think you're going to get 20 wins, maybe close to 250 strikeouts again, and great peripherals. Sticking with the pitchers, let's talk about a couple of injury risk pitchers that, if they stay healthy, have major upside, and currently are going right around the same area in the 9th, 10th round of draft, which, like I said, could be a steal and could be a bust. We've got the Yankees ace Masahiro Tanaka and Phillies ace Cliff Lee, both with arm troubles, which really worries you for a pitcher. So, Smokey, they're both there. Who are you taking?
I'm probably going to take Tanaka, only because I don't think the Phillies are going to struggle to win 70 games this year. Their team is just abysmal. And I think actually Cliff Lee, if he shows anything that he's healthy this year, I think he's probably going to find a new team by the All-Star break. But that's just me. Tanaka, you know, we saw what we had last year. His elbow is definitely a concern, and I'm a Yankee fan, so I'm definitely concerned because our season and our starting pitching basically hinges around him and CeCe Sabathia actually coming back and actually becoming a pitcher instead of a thrower. But that just remains to be seen. But I would take Tanaka based on what we saw last year. The K's are there. The control of game is there. You know, the win potential is in his favor. So I would probably take him over Cliff Lee.
I totally agree. I almost actually did in the 9th round in our draft. I decided to go for the safety of Shields without the arm issues, but it was tough passing up the upside of Tanaka, you know, as a Yankee fan and watching what he was doing last year with the Caper 9. Moving on to some of the position players, start with a couple of young outfielders. Currently, ADP is early to mid-5th round on these guys. And that's tough because neither one of them has an extensive track record. But we get Cole Calhoun of the Angels, who showed a lot of stuff last year, and Christian Yelich of the Marlins, who may even be in a better situation because he's going to be batting right behind D. Gordon and right in front of Giancarlo Stanton. And both of them look to be great keeper prospects. But in redraft leagues, if they're both sitting there, who are you taking, Sky, and why?
Pardon me. I'd actually probably go Yelich there, simply for the fact that Mike, you know, the Razzball site playfully calls him the sociopath. I feel like he gets platooned. He's going to get platooned way too much. I don't think Yelich gets forced into that role as much. I think their fourth outfielder is Ichiro Suzuki, another lefty, which wouldn't make any sense. And I think their upside is similar. Calhoun maybe has a little bit more power upside, but I like the balanced approach of Yelich. And like you said, I'm pretty sure Yelich will see a lot of fastballs sitting behind D, you know, trying to give the catcher a chance to throw D out. And also because Giancarlo's there, they don't want to give up anything to him. So I just like Yelich's situation much better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah, when I mentioned he's one of those three hitters I'm keeping cheap, $5 I got him for, which I'm very excited for. One thing he does need to fix is he gets the ball on the ground too much, a 61% ground ball rate last year, 63% the year before. That's got to improve if he wants to improve on those power numbers. But, you know, he could get you 100 runs, 20 stolen bases, and close to a .300 batting average. So I'm with you on that one. A couple other young outfielders going earlier, so you're going to have to spend on them. We get the Rockies' Corey Dickerson, who busted out of the gate last year. And if you guys play as much DFS as I do, you took him mm-hmm. every time he was facing a righty, especially in Colorado, because he mashed them. So we get Corey uh-huh. Dickerson and George Springer. So Smokey, their ADPs are about 3rd, 4th round. Who are you taking of the two of them?
Yeah, I'll take Dickerson, only because there's probably a couple factors that are working against Springer. You know, he's kind of an average dragger. You know, his average is going to be in maybe like the 230 range, and he K's way too much for me to actually invest that kind of pick for. Yeah, the home runs might be there. The RBIs might be there. The Astros are kind of like a upstart team, but I'm going with Corey Dickerson and the whole Coors effect, like you said, with the right-handed. His stats at home against right-handers are just enough to make you be like, okay, yeah, he's in my lineup every single day. So, yeah, I'd go Corey Dickerson.
4.4 weighted on base average. I'm with you on that. Now, moving into the infield, we got a couple of bopping first basemen, both which were complete busts last year, one due to injury and one due to performance. And both can be had at a value this year based on their ADPs last year. Both were first-round picks about last year. and some now they're falling into the fourth, fifth round in some drafts later on. I know somebody in our draft, I forget who it was, I think it was Seth. Seth Klein got him with the first pick of the fifth round or something ridiculous like that. So we had Prince Fielder and Chris Davis. So, Sky, who are you going to take of those two between Fielder and Davis?
Well, that's funny because guess who drafted Davis? That'd be moi. yeah, I'm still back in on Chris Davis. And I'm not doing it because I'm looking at 2013. 2013 will forever and always be an outlier for him. We saw a career year. That is what it is. Those happen. But we also saw, like, a career worst year in 2014 from him. And so he's pretty much somewhere in between. You know, when I look at Chris Davis, I see a guy that could hit anywhere from 240 to 260. But I also see a guy that's going to hit me 30-plus home runs without really trying that hard. He's always just been a pure power guy. And, you know, a return back to, let's say, his 2012 with a few more games under his belt is kind of would be the pie-in-the-sky moment for me, around a 260 to 270 average, 33 to 35 home runs. And in a still a really good lineup that people are downgrading a little bit because Nelson Cruz is gone, but they shouldn't be.
No, I agree with you on that one. Steve Pierce is a very capable bat as well. I like him as a late flyer in these drafts too. And you're right with the 2012 season. You know, he's not going to match 53 homers ever, but 2012 he had 33 homers. He drove in 85 runs. He batted 270. I mean, you get that in the fifth round, you're kicking up your heels. So I'm with you on that one as well. And not coming off a neck surgery as well with Chris Davis. So let's
and,
get one
and an
more
increasing ground ball rate. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yes, absolutely. That's a great point as well. That's a good thing, too. If you listen, look at the ground ball rate if you're trying to get a gauge on power. A low ground ball rate will suppress the power, and you want to look at the line drive rate as well because a lot of times these balls that just barely leave the yard can be homers the next year. So a significant line drive rate, something like 22-23% is considered to be very good. So that's something you're going to want to look for when you're doing your advanced stat research. So let's get one more of these pairings in. We'll go to you, Smokey, and we'll go back into that end of the first round. This is an interesting debate this year as well. In a lot of ways, people are saying these two second basemen are both being overrated as some of them are going in the first round. I took Robinson Cano with the 11th pick of the first round. So we got him and we got Jose Altuve. The clear cut 1 and 2 second baseman, I think. Who's number one for you, though?
I'm going Altuve over Cano, only because if you match up the stats, if you're playing in a 5-by-5, 3 always beats 2, and Altuve is going to probably score more runs, probably have a higher batting average, and have more stolen bases. Those three things for me make him better than Cano. Could Cano hit 25 home runs? He might. But he could also hit 15 again, and that's that stadium suppresses left-handed power. It saps it right out of it, and it showed last year. I don't know if it was a move to the new stadium and he just wasn't adjusted, or this is a 32 going on 33-year-old Robinson Cano that we're going to be seeing. You know, could you pencil him in for 20, 80, and 80? Absolutely, and you'd probably sign up for that now and probably just set him in your lineup and forget it. But the average potential and the stolen bases for Altuve just push him over the top above Cano for me.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And my reasoning for taking him in that slot was the safety of, 6 straight 300 batting averages. In retrospect, though, I really regret not taking Jose Bautista with that pick because I could have had safety, consistency, and power in a better hitting situation. So I'm with you on that one as well. That's going to do it for us this week. I want to thank you two guys very much for joining us today. Again, we were joined by Sky Sperling of Razzball.com. You can find him on Twitter at Sky_Razzball, and Robert Smokey Langevin, also of Razzball.com, and you can find him at Smokey_Lugie, or is it Lugie? Did I say it right? Lugie, right?
Lugie. It's like the left-hander of Lugie. Lugie. Left the only one out.
Oh, yeah, of course. Missed the baseball thing there. that's Smokey_Lugie, L-O-O-G-Y. And join us again next week. Joe DiRienzo will be back hosting, and we'll have some more fantasy talk for you. on the Fantasy Team podcast. My name is Jamie Calandra. You can find me on Twitter at JAC3600. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week.